This is the podcast for a Friday as the week comes to a close. Bob McCowan and John Shannon are with you. Thanks for joining us. Usually a quiet time of year as we get set for the All-Star game. Most of the major sports events are behind us. Wimbledon is ongoing and will continue through the weekend. The British Open is coming up, I understand. MLB has their All-Star game ahead. But the NHL season is always done. The NBA season is always done, but not this year. We sort of mentioned it the other day. It's kind of hard to keep track of where you are in the year, isn't it?
It is. For the longest time, the National Hockey League would unveil its schedule the day after the Major League Baseball All-Star game because there were no sporting events in North America on that day. And it was a good news day. If you put something out the day after the All-Star game, you would at least get some attention. Well, with everything kind of drifting together and the NBA still in the middle of their NBA finals and the Stanley Cup just over, there's not much news to, there's not much time to take advantage of anymore. So it's a strange time. I must admit, I saw the notes and the press releases about All-Star balloting, but I'm not sure how much interest I have in the Major League Baseball All-Star weekend this year more than any other time.
Well, you're probably right, but I confess my interest level in this game, as with all other All-Star games, has waned steadily over the past 30 or 40 years, simply because the game is essentially meaningless.
Right. For lots of reasons, though, more than I think the one you're going to talk about.
Well, hockey players don't play the way they play in right. regular season. NBA, they don't play the way they play. Major League Baseball, I think they do for the most part. I don't know whether pitchers, wind it up and fire it as hard as they can, or, I don't know how they mitigate the potential impact of an injury during an All-Star game, except their appearances are very short. Mm. Most guys only pitch one inning.
Right.
And the problem with the All-Star game is it has no fundamental uniqueness anymore.
Well, this is an old man moment, Bob.
Well, it is.
Because this was the one event all year long you got to see, whether it was in a National League park or an American League park, you got to see all the uniforms of all the teams.
And well, you got to see all the great players that you never got a chance to see.
And it was really kind of cool. And there were only two times a year in the Major League Baseball season that you saw American League versus National League. You saw it at the All-Star game and you saw it at the World Series. And it truly was special. It's unfortunate. I mean, interleague play has done a lot of things and some of them have damaged. The other thing, Bob, is every game is televised now. Every game and every league is televised. So special events mid-season don't mean near as much as they once did, I think. And it's the downside of having the ability to watch everything in your living room. It really is.
Well, but truthfully, the ego and self-centeredness of players has been a big factor in this as well. There was a time, and I know there's two sides to this story, but there was a time when players played for pride as much as for dollars. And that has changed now.
Yeah,
now it's all about money, and they don't get paid to go to All-Star games.
No.
We're seeing more and more NBA players backing out of All-Star games. The Pro Bowl in the National Football League is a joke.
Does it even exist anymore?
Well, I think it does, but I wouldn't watch it on a bet. Yeah. With no disrespect to the guys who go, so many of the best players do not.
Yeah. Well, there are a few storylines in Major League Baseball, including the fact that the All-Star game is in Denver this year, as opposed to where it was supposed to be. There's lots to talk about.
Well, one of the things that I think of, and maybe we'll ask our guests this, is the possibility of a reformat. And I'm not even sure it works. Hmm. But we'll talk about it. Bill Shakin of the LA Times will join us in moments as we continue after these messages. It's McCowan. It's Shannon. And joining us, not quite from Hollywood, but close enough to see it, if you believe the images. Bill Shaken of the LA Times is with us. How you doing? Nice to see you.
Nice to be with you.
John and I were just talking in the opening before you joined us about All-Star Games and the dramatic change we've seen over the last 30, 40 years of the impact of All-Star Games, what they mean, the players' reaction to them, how they play. And I think we all concede that from an effort point of view, the closest to being a real game is still baseball. The dilemma is they don't let the players play very many innings, especially pitchers anymore. How do you feel about the baseball All-Star Game these days?
I still think it's the best of all the All-Star Games. Football, everybody wants a free trip to Hawaii when that was available, but otherwise they don't want to play. Basketball appears to be, you know, a scrimmage interrupting a weekend of parties. So I think baseball is still the best, but I think a lot of the memories that, you know, old time fans have are from when the league had, say, 16 teams and you'd have guys that would go out and play all nine innings. And now there's 30 teams. You want to get somebody from every team picked for the game. You want to get everybody from every team into the game if you can. And, you know, I would love nothing more than to see Shohei Ohtani take four or five at bats on Tuesday, because that's the guy everybody wants to see. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they have to get the DH off the bench into the game too.
How do you think the players react to the All-Star weekend?
They like it for the most part. I mean, certainly there are some that would rather just have a few days off, whether it's a case of injury or just a case of wanting to spend some time away from the ballpark, given that they're at a ballpark pretty much every day from February till the end of September, and maybe longer if they make the playoffs. But the guys that I've seen at All-Star Games are all excited to be there. And, you know, it's not really that huge of a time commitment. You fly in Sunday night after whatever game you play on Sunday. Monday you have some interviews, round of batting practice, some parties. You can watch the home run derby on the field if you want, if you're not in the derby. Tuesday you play the game, and literally all these guys have private jets lined up to get out Tuesday night. Some guys are gone before the game's even over.
The former commissioner, in an effort to increase interest and impact in the All-Star Game, decided to award home field advantage in the World Series to the winner of the All-Star Game. It was a bad idea, kind of, wasn't it?
Yes, because number one, there wasn't any great statistical correlation. It turned out there was no great advantage by getting that, but also because they wouldn't come out and give you a straight answer. Because when we asked the question of, hey, Bud Selig, if you really want to move away from rotating the World Series from American League team has the home field advantage one year, National League team the next, which is what they used to do, we said, why don't you just give a home field advantage to the team with the best record? And he said, well, we can't arrange that many hotel rooms on short notice. And I will point out, the system we have now has the team with the best record having home field advantage. So it was clearly all about trying to juice it up for TV. And I guess it was worth the shot, but it did not work.
I guess everybody has had ideas of what you can and can't do. One of the ones that I floated years ago, and I did it specifically for the National Hockey League All-Star Game. I suggested they put $10 million in cash in the penalty box in an opaque bag and say at the end of the game, the winning team gets the money. I don't think it was the dumbest idea I've ever had. It may have been, but I don't think it was the dumbest. The problem is you'd have to put a lot more than $10 million in a bag to make these guys play for it. There's no way we do that, huh, Billy?
Yeah, I think you're dead on. I mean, when you've got, you know, the Mike Trouts and Fernando Tatises of the world that have signed contracts for, you know, $300 and $400 million, I mean, maybe, you know, 1/30th share of a $10 million pool might not be what, you know, entices them. I mean, you can try to do it where you give them the best time possible, whether you, you know, come and bring your family and have some special activities for them, experiences where you do get to be around the All-Stars. But, you know, I think back to, you know, when we've all first started covering baseball, there was no interleague play. So you really never got
That's right.
to see or meet the players who were the stars in the other league. And the All-Star game was a super special event because that was really the only chance you had to do it as a player. And now, you know, every day you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Ohtani. In many ways, he's the story of this season. And hopefully the story of the All-Star game. You've seen him play a lot more than Bob and I have. Other than his versatility, what else is special about this guy?
Pretty much everything. You know, I was talking to Mike Trout about him the other day, and he goes, "You know, I've never seen him get upset. He's just a happy-go-lucky guy, works hard, studies hard, but you know, I can work hard and study hard, and obviously I have no chance to hit a ball 500 feet and certainly not to do that and throw at 100 miles an hour. But the fact that he can do both is so amazing, not only to some fans, but just to listen to the way other players talk about him. Because it'd be one thing to say, okay, you can hold down a spot in a major league starting rotation, be like the number three or number four guy, and you know, you hit seventh as a DH, and that would be a pretty good accomplishment. But this guy is leading the major leagues in home runs and has the nastiest off-speed pitch of anybody in Major League Baseball. It's crazy, and it's great.
Yeah, the intriguing thing to me, though, is that if this young man had been developed in North America, he would never have been allowed to do what he is now being allowed to do at the major league level. And yet, we're all certainly familiar with young kids. Any of us go to a little league game, well, in any sport, a kid's game, and the best pitcher is probably the best hitter on the team. The guy who plays the best offense in basketball is probably the guy who plays the best defense in basketball too. And yet at some point in our lives, or maybe long before we were, any of us were even born, the decision was made that you really can't do two things. You can only be good at one. We all used to play every sport. Now kids are targeted at a very young age. Concentrate on this sport if you want to have success. Is there a chance that Ohtani's success at both things, pitching and hitting, Bill, will lead to a change in that philosophy of the tunnel vision of a young athlete?
I think you're already starting to see it with some teams. The Rays, this will not surprise you, are at the advent of this. They've got a guy in their farm system playing two-way who is a very high draft pick. But ultimately, you see proof of success. And just like teams look at other teams that win championships and say, hey, we should do what they do. Well, look at what Ohtani's doing. He's filling a role for the Angels, basically two for the price of one, right? Because they have an everyday hitter and a rotation mainstay. And if you go back in Ohtani's story, coming out of high school, he was thinking about coming to America straight away. You know, once you sign professionally in Japan, you're committed there for a certain number of years. But he was willing, and some other guys have done this, to come straight from high school in Japan to what would be the minor leagues. And one of the Japanese pro teams said, we don't want you to do that. We know you're interested in playing both ways. And we don't want you to have to choose. Come play with us and you can play both ways. And he did. And obviously it seems to have worked out pretty well.
I think virtually every other team in Major League Baseball besides the Angels would like to have an Ohtani. Yeah. But refresh my memory. Do we know that there were teams that were reluctant to recruit him, sign him because of his desire to play both?
Well, initially for a kid coming out of high school, I think, as you mentioned, there's sort of a specialization now where we're going to take you as a pitcher or as a hitter.
Correct.
By the time he had played a few years in Japan, I think it was pretty clear to everybody that he was going to come over and do both. And although all 30 teams were interested in signing him, there wasn't much point in spending a lot of time recruiting him if you weren't going to let him do both, because obviously he could find a team that was going to let him do both. But I do remember his first spring with the Angels, it did not go well. And there was a lot of talk of maybe this guy's got to pick one or the other. And, you know, from where we are then to where we are now is quite a journey in itself.
Hey, Bill, do you think we'll see or how long do you think it'll take to see the Ohtani effect, that this happens more regularly in baseball, if at all?
Well, I think as teams get more analytic, if you will, on how they use their rosters, the advantage of trying to find a guy who can do both would be great. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a guy who's a star both ways. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have had a couple guys in their system the past few years that they try to develop as, you know, primarily you're going to be a position player, but you're going to have the ability and the background to pitch so that if we need an extra guy in the bullpen, it's not just a joke we're putting out some catcher who's never thrown in 10 years. You can actually be a guy that can eat up some innings in relief if we're getting killed. And that would be a useful position. And there are teams working on that right now.
And now just to follow up on that, is this only an offshore thing, or is it, do you see this happening in North America and with North American players?
I mean, we'll see how it goes at the major league level. But like I mentioned, the Dodgers have been looking for guys to do this for a while. The Rays have one of their top prospects who can go both ways. And ultimately, if you're open to it, I think you're going to try it. But, mm-hmm. you know, we'll see. Maybe the, you know, ultimate story of Ohtani is not that it's his willingness to go both ways or his team's willingness to let him try, but that he actually did it. Because doing either one at the level he's doing is pretty amazing. To do both is another level.
One of the things we do see with some regularity in the minor leagues is guys switching positions. Guys that are drafted as pitchers become outfielders or first basemen, and the opposite happens too. I think the Blue Jays have a guy in their system who was drafted as a catcher and converted him into a pitcher. And I don't pretend to know the entire chronology of the story, but obviously they saw something at some point that said, hey, maybe you can throw hard. Why don't you just go on the mound and try it? I guess the dilemma there, Bill, though, is that those kinds of conversions are done principally because the guy demonstrates he's not good enough at the position that he was drafted in. And so they try and find another place for him.
Yeah. Kenley Jansen, who's the Dodgers closer and has been for a long time, many times an all-star. He was a catcher and he was hitting okay, but not great. And as you mentioned, they saw his arm strength and said, why don't you give it a shot on the mound? Troy Percival, who was the Angels closer for many years and closed on their World Series championship team. Same thing, drafted as a catcher. Okay hitter, but boy, once they put him on the mound, let's try that. You know, I think the question is, can you maybe develop a guy that can be really good in one area and maybe not that great in the other area, but at least enough to give you some flexibility on a roster spot? Because, you know, we're looking at rosters these days, as you guys know, there's 26 men now on a major league roster. I went out to a Dodger game a couple weeks ago and they had a 10-man relief corps, you know, not 10 men on the pitching staff, 10 men in relief. Like, okay, this seems like a waste of resources, but if one of those guys could also play the field, and again, maybe not an Ohtani level, but if you become a utility guy, you know, it used to be you could play infield and outfield. Well, maybe now infield/outfield/pitch.
Bill Shakin of the LA Times is with us. Take a quick break and come back after these messages. It's Bob McCown. It's John Shannon. We're with Bill Shakin of the LA Times. Focus on the Dodgers a little bit for the next bit. I guess one of the more intriguing stories that we're waiting to see unfold is that of Trevor Bauer, who's on administrative leave. That leave has now been extended, I presume, for another 7 days. Is that accurate, Bill?
At this point, yes, for another 7 days.
Is it surprising? I haven't followed the history of these kinds of situations, but it seems rather surprising to me that they've even extended this. Generally speaking, they're able to come to some kind of conclusion in a relatively short period of time. What do you make of this?
Well, when the allegations of the woman who is accusing Trevor Bauer of sexual assault became public, it turns out that the police department in Pasadena, California, which most people know is the site of the Rose Bowl, but it's an LA suburb, they've been looking into this for 6 weeks. So for Major League Baseball to jump in as they have in the past week and think they're going to conclude their investigation within a week when they're working independently from the police department, because the police department isn't about to share information when they haven't even decided whether the case is going to get turned over to the district attorney for prosecution and whether the district attorney is actually going to prosecute. So for Major League Baseball to come to a decision this fast would be unusual, and it probably wouldn't be fair to Trevor Bauer or the woman, because still gathering facts.
And where the Dodgers seem to have disassociated themselves a little bit from Bauer as well.
Well, I mean, to the extent that they canceled his bobblehead night and they're not selling his shirts anymore, yes. I don't know where they're going to go beyond this, because they don't have control of the process right now. The league and the union has a collectively bargained process as to how to deal with allegations of sexual assault. So whatever the Dodgers might or might want to do, or might not want to do for that matter, to Bauer in terms of discipline, they can't until the league sends it back to them. And, you know, that could be tomorrow, or that could be weeks from now, or, you know, maybe at the end of the season. We just don't know, because there's an active investigation underway. And I don't think Major League Baseball, if they can avoid it, wants to make any decision while the criminal investigation, which is not their doing, is still going on.
Now, my understanding is that Bauer has a legal hearing 2 weeks from today on the 23rd. Of July. I don't pretend to know what the nature of that legal hearing is. Do you?
Yeah, I actually wrote a story about this the other day. If anybody wants to read it, it's at latimes.com/sports. But the essence is, the woman who is making the claims against him went to court and said, I need a restraining order. I don't want this guy calling me, visiting me, bothering me in any way. So the presumption of the law in California is you need that. So you get right away, and then they schedule a hearing to see whether to keep it in place. And the hearing is the place where Trevor Bauer and his attorneys can come in and challenge what the woman is saying. The attorneys I've spoken with who practice in this area in Southern California say that, you know, while Bauer's representatives can say, oh, we're going to come and challenge all her story, that doesn't matter at this hearing. The only people that the court actually wants to hear from to see if this woman should be granted the protection that she's seeking, the woman and Trevor Bauer. And if Trevor Bauer were to get up on the witness stand and say anything, if there's no decision about whether he's getting prosecuted by then, he's going to put himself in jeopardy, because anything he says on the witness stand could be used against him in a future criminal case. So it's possible that hearing is just delayed. And most of the attorneys I've talked to think that's the likely outcome. And Trevor Bauer is entitled under the law to just ask for a delay. But the fact that there's a hearing on a restraining order while a criminal investigation is still pending, if it's still pending at that point, means Bauer is not getting up on the witness stand in 2 weeks.
How much of a distraction has this been for the ball club?
Well, it's not the kind of stuff that they're, you know, used to dealing with, but the fact that Bauer is on leave means he's away from the team. And I think the bigger issue for the team would be if he were around every day and there would be uncomfortable conversations and people not what to say or who to say it to. We had one unfortunate incident where the day that Major League Baseball put Bauer on leave, Stan Kasten, who's the president of the Dodgers, was asked about it. Some reporters found him on the field and Washington, because the Dodgers, by coincidence, were in D.C. having their visit at the White House that day. And first thing Kasten did was started joking with the reporters there. He's like, well, we had a great morning, and now I have to talk about this. And then he said, you know, I told Dave Roberts to come out here and say, hey, you know, you guys want to talk about Bauer? Can we just talk about sticky substances instead? And, you know, whatever Kasten's intent might have been as far as lightening the mood, it came off as horribly tone deaf, given the incidents with Jared Porter and Mickey Callaway this year, and baseball's, you know, proclaimed renewal on listening to women and trying to root out some of the bad actors, if you will, toward women within the sport. So that was probably the most unfortunate thing from the Dodgers' point so far.
With Kershaw now out, you can make the argument that two of the three best starting pitchers for the Dodgers are on the sidelines as they, you know, pursue another World Series championship, and right now the San Francisco Giants, while trying to battle off the San Diego Padres. It's always been an organization that's had great depth. Is there enough depth to hide these absences?
Well, even before the Bauer situation came up, they had been running bullpen games for a while because Dustin May, who was their fifth starter at the beginning of the season, is out now after Tommy John surgery. So he'll be back next year. They had a lot of depth. Part of their depth was Tony Gonsolin, who got hurt. They're building him up. He's now in the starting rotation, but he's not built up to where they would hope he'd be had he had a normal spring. So he's getting to be a full-time starter again. They have Walker Buehler, certainly, and Julio Arias, but that's it for right now. So I think, you know, their first interest is what happens with Clayton Kershaw, who's getting an MRI today, and is he simply having some routine inflammation and, you know, he'll be back after the All-Star break, in which case that's one story. Or is there a lengthy absence, in which case, you know, you've got three starting pitchers right now, and that's probably not where you want to be.
Well, and under those circumstances, with the first trade deadline upcoming, one would assume the Dodgers would have to be active then, wouldn't they?
Probably. I mean, they don't like to be told they have to do something because they like to show you how smart they are. And
yeah, I know.
And they're not, they're right, but certainly they'll be looking. They've brought in Yu Darvish at a trade deadline. They brought in Manny Machado at a trade deadline. They're certainly not shy about making the deals when they have to. And again, they don't have the depth right now that they normally would because they've gone through all of it.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that division is that both the Padres and the Giants, I guess the Giants are a bigger surprise, but this is not as easy a division as it once was for the Dodgers, is it?
No, I mean, it's great for baseball, but it's not quite so great for the Dodgers. But you want to have some rivalries. And now the Dodgers have their traditional rivalry with San Francisco, which a lot of people thought might come back in 2 or 3 years. Well, the Giants are still there right now. And everybody's been saying since April, the Giants will fade. And, you know, here we are at the All-Star break and they're with the best record in baseball. So far, so good. And of course, the Padres' star-studded collection of talent, great too. So it should be a fun race.
Before we let you go, I'm intrigued by your perception of where Major League Baseball is at right now. The focus of attention for the last couple of weeks, as you well know, has been the umpires stopping all pitchers on their way off the field to check to see what kind of goop they've got on their bodies. And for the most part, the pitchers have been clean, and not surprising because they know this is coming. The notion of games that are too long has essentially been forgotten. The reality that younger people are tending to look at other sports before they look at baseball the way we did as young kids is essentially being ignored, at least publicly. What would you do? What do you think the biggest problem in baseball right now is, and how would you address it?
Well, at the start of the season, and even for a couple seasons beyond, people have talked about, you know, for old-time fans, people watch for a while, they're going to watch no matter. They love baseball. But if you weren't familiar with the sport, you'd start watching and say, this game is boring. There's no action. It's not so much a matter of the time of game. It's a matter of the pace of game. And this guy walks, the next guy strikes out, the next guy walks, the next guy strikes out, someone hits a home run. But none of those are balls in play, and that's where the game has evolved because of the analytics. So baseball is trying some experiments in the minor leagues this year. At some levels, they're limiting how much the pitchers can throw over to first base. At some levels, they're actually making wider bases, so the distance between the bases is smaller. Both of those, of course, to encourage stolen bases. They've talked about a pitch clock for many years, and they've tried it at different levels of the minors. They're doing experiments about, okay, maybe we've gone too far with shifting, so maybe let's put the infielders back where they're supposed to play traditionally, and we'll get some more hits, with the idea that exciting games are doubles, triples, stolen bases. Standing around and waiting for walks and strikeouts, not so much. So now you overlay the issue that you mentioned, Bob, about the foreign substances on the baseball. And as those have been taken out of the game, at least for the moment, guess what happened? The offense started going up and people started hitting more balls into play because the crazy spin on the balls that contributed to all the strikeouts has been lessened. We don't have certainly the game we had, you know, 20 or 30 years ago where we got a bunch of contact hitters who never walk and steal 60 bases in the leadoff spot, but at least they're making some progress. And maybe, you know, whether it's an unintended or intended result from the crackdown on foreign substances, we'll start to develop a game that people will actually be excited to see.
How much pushback has there been the fact that that they did made this rule change mid-season? This wasn't an off-season discussion. How much disagreement has that created?
Initially, there was some pushback because I think a lot of people might have seen the video of Tyler Glasnow from the Rays. He said, well, you know, I can't use some stuff I'm used to using that helped me grip the ball, so now I got to grip the ball a lot harder, and then I hurt my arm. And maybe that's connected, maybe it's not, but it made sense. Having said that, I think we're getting through it just fine. I think there's a lot of people who somehow painted this out to be the next great baseball scandal after steroids. And, you know, it's like, come on. I mean, in steroids, there were magic numbers, you know, 755 for Hank Aaron's home run total. Bonds hitting like 73 home runs in a year. Come on, that's crazy. Nobody like, oh, Trevor Bauer's spin rate is down from 2617 to 2369. I mean, you know, and it's everybody. I mean, Bonds, you could look at his head size was, you know, off the screen.
Yeah.
You know, McGuire, Sosa. I mean, nobody's really the face of this stuff as much as Bauer and Gerrit Cole are painted to be. It'll be fine. This will pass.
You know, we are fortunate enough here in Toronto to see Vladdy Guerrero play at age 22 and having a remarkable season. And for me, you know, one of the geezers, I suppose now, the stat that impresses me the most is the guy's hitting 340 or thereabouts. Yeah, he's got 27, 28 home runs. And yeah, he's got, I don't know how many RBIs, 60 plus, 70 plus RBIs. And those are all great numbers. And for a good portion of the season, he looked like he could be a Triple Crown winner, which would be pretty impressive. But the intriguing one for me, Shaken, is that the guy's hitting 344, and it's a number that no one in baseball today seems to care about. Does it still matter to you?
It would to me, but I think that goes back to the rise of analytics because the emphasis went from getting a hit to get on base to just getting on base as people realize, look, the guy on first base is just as good, whether it's a single or a walk. So the focus became on base percentage. And all of a sudden guys are making the all-star team. And you can look at some of the numbers this year with, you know, low 200 batting averages, but who cares as long as they get on base and hit home runs.
Yeah. It's the game is filled with dilemmas that seem hard to accommodate in my mind. I'm more than willing to look at the new generation of statistics and cybermetrics and all that kind of stuff and try and assimilate it. But I confess, at the end of the day, innings pitched, strikeouts, batting average, sure home runs, extra base hits, those things all still kind of matter to me. And I judge a player based on.
There used to be three things, right, Bob? Three things, right? That was it. You used to be able to decide that, you know, hits, average, and home runs. That was it.
Yeah.
As a kid. Hey, before we go, Bill, this was an all-star game that's coming up that was moved from Atlanta to Denver. There was lots of controversy when they did do it. How much play do you think that will get in the next few days?
I would be surprised if it gets that much. I think the people that are shouting have done a lot of their shouting. They may do a little more shouting now, but I thought it was noteworthy that Major League Baseball has had a pretty good history, an unfortunate history of being reactive and responding to things. And in this case, Rob Manfred, I thought was pretty proactive ahead of a lot of the corporations that challenged restrictions in Georgia. And I noticed the other day, turned on the TV and there's a big press conference and it's the Justice Department in Washington announcing it's going to court to fight the voting restrictions that Rob Manfred started fighting 2 months ago.
Well, let's hope that continues. You know, I think the cause is the right one. And I do agree with you. The commissioner was ahead of the scope in making the decision that he did, and he made the right decision. We always enjoy having you on. We appreciate your time very greatly. Enjoy your day, and we'll talk to you, we hope, somewhere down the road. Thank you, Bill.
Hopefully from the opener of the Rejuvenated Expos.
Anyway, notice we didn't bring anything up about Canadians. We didn't bring anything about your hockey club. Bill, so.
Thank you. Merci.
Bill Shaken of the LA Times. We'll be back after these. Again, our thanks to Bill Shaken of the LA Times for joining us. Lest we forget, the NBA playoffs final is ongoing.
Yeah.
And Suns have a 2-donut lead over the Bucks. You know, the one thing we mentioned is the possibility that Budenholzer saved his job, the head coach of the Bucks, saved his job by getting to the final. Could he lose his job if they get wiped out?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think when you look at what Phoenix has done, I think Phoenix was the higher seed. Phoenix was a better team. Everybody's now looking at the at a sweep scenario because Phoenix has won and won so convincingly at home, Bob. But you know, they've got a couple of injuries now. You have to wonder what kind of effect that will have. And Giannis was much better in game two than he was in game one, but he sure didn't have very much help. You know, Chris Middleton couldn't hit the three, and Brooke Lopez wasn't near as effective as he has been in previous games. So, I suspect that Milwaukee will put up a better effort at the two games in Milwaukee, but to me, it's pretty over. But I don't think he's losing his job now after getting through three rounds of the playoffs.
No, you're probably right. There's a commonality of opinion that you have to learn to lose before you can learn to win, and experience in a championship is...
Milwaukee's learning to lose a lot.
Well, there's two factors here that... and this makes the series intriguing for me. Milwaukee has been a team trying to get over the hump, much like the Philadelphia 76ers and a few others. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to say, well, they got to learn to lose before they can learn to win. Well, yes, they've advanced to a place where they hadn't advanced before the final. But now they're getting their hats handed to them, at least in the first two games. And who's doing it? A team that probably shouldn't have even been invited into the postseason last year, those eight games kind of play-in, who went out and won all eight of those games and still didn't make the playoffs. That's how far behind they were. Mm-hmm. And now have a collection of guys. Well, as a collection, they've never played a playoff game before this year.
Right.
And now they're in the final and they're up 2-0. Well, so much for the theory that you have to learn how to play in the playoffs.
Yeah. I tell you what though, if you could put Chris Paul on the court and put Booker on the court, you got a chance.
Well,
and
I'll give you that.
That's a backcourt. That's a backcourt for, that might be a backcourt for the ages.
Look, Chris Paul's been around the NBA for 15, 16 years.
Yeah, I know.
And hasn't gotten this far. We know what a great player he is, but he can't do it on his own.
Yeah. No, and that's right. Well, and by the way, Devin Booker, you know, tried to will his way into the playoffs a few times in previous years, and he couldn't do it by itself either. So,
but when you talk about the big stars and the big, like, what LA did, what Brooklyn did, Phoenix Suns were not even in this conversation.
You know, we've had this discussion a few times during the season about copycat teams and copycat leagues. And do you wonder now that we're going to go away and with the lack of success, for instance, the Lakers did have this year and the Clippers didn't get too far enough. Are we going to see a movement back to what I would describe as team basketball as opposed to big three basketball?
Well, if you need to or want to or have the ability to, you add a player. It could be a big name player.
Sure.
But you don't add two or three deliberately and then say, to hell with the other nine guys. We're going to go with these guys. Going to pay them all max dollars and away we go.
Well,
it's sort of been the philosophy.
And here's the interesting thing. At one point, Chris Paul and James Harden were together, and Harden ended up going to New Jersey and Paul ends up going to Phoenix. And I know that the timing is not comparable, but is New Jersey sitting there saying we got the wrong guy out of Houston or out of Oklahoma City at the time?
Well, you know, it used to be the phrase "you bought a championship" was a derogatory phrase.
Yeah. Not in the NBA anymore.
No, it's not.
No.
But if Phoenix prevails here, you can make the argument that two of the last three NBA championship teams did it the traditional way, the normal way.
Yeah.
You know, the Suns went out and got Paul in a deal. The Raptors went out and got Kawhi in a deal. But basically the rest of the roster, more or less, was developed over time. They didn't go out and buy it.
Well, I mean, Milwaukee has to go home and win both games. And I just don't see that happening.
Neither do I. I mean, I'm not calling for four straight, but so far, Bucks haven't looked like they're capable of beating the Suns. That can change, but have a nice weekend, Mr. Shannon.
You too. It'll be good.
And we'll catch you on Monday. Thank you all for watching or listening. We'll see you then. Goodbye from Toronto.